You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Guidepost podcast. It's like episode 10,000 now. I have no clue at this point. We have made it to 2025 somehow, which is incredible, especially with everything we've been through lately on the fisheries front. But today is exciting because we've got a little bit more of a positive topic, a little bit less of a nerdy topic. No numbers, no young of the years, no fish spawning metrics. We're going to talk about business. And we've got a really cool opportunity to dive into what I would call, you know, one of the more successful startups I've seen in the fishing industry. A lot of times we have great brand sponsors on who, you know, we have a representative from a brand that's a company of 500 people, sometimes 5,000, these big global brands. But one of the really special parts about ASGA and what we stand for is that healthier fisheries and abundant fisheries present business opportunity for everyone. And that could be one single plug builder who, you know, is making plugs out of their basement every morning, or our guest that we have today. So without further ado, I welcome Zach Richardson to the Guidepost podcast. Zach, what is up, dude?
What's going on? Thank you, Cody, for having me. Most importantly, I really, really appreciate the opportunity and love what you guys do. So
yeah, man, this is gonna be really cool. So why don't we give people a super quick breakdown, and then we'll start to pick apart a little bit. But you're in Massachusetts, and tell us, Zach, what do you do for work? I'm looking at you in a shop right now.
Yeah. So my name is Zach Richardson, and we build custom fishing rods here in Westport, Massachusetts. And we do a little bit of everything from freshwater and fly rods all the way up to big, massive, full outfits for guys buying the brand new Viking or Bayless or Spencer, whatever you want to call it, you know. So the range and the spectrum that we can offer is pretty wide, which is unique, you know.
I love it. I'm definitely more towards the front. I believe it or not, there's no Viking park behind me. You can see my house.
Me neither.
maybe one day. But no, so that's awesome. Okay, so you run Zach Custom Rods and you make fishing rods. How the heck does someone, especially in an established how the heck does someone get into making fishing rods and building into such a sustainable business?
Yeah. So back in the day when I was younger, so I've been doing this since I was like 11, 12 years old. I'm 26 right now. So back in the day, I spent all my summers down here in Westport, Massachusetts. So I was fishing the Westport River on a little 13-foot whaler. And I was the fishing nut, the one that was obsessed about fishing, like waking up at 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning, 2 in the morning, trying to get my dad out of bed the whole nine yards, and he'd be like, all right, here we go, you know? And I just, my love and passion for the water has just always been like my identity, you know? As I progressed in my skill of fishing, I'd always want the Van Stahl reel or the upgraded rod or this or that, you know? And my parents were just like, nope, like we're not doing that. You know, we're not going to go spend this money for you, blah, blah. And I was just like, well, I really want it. And so I was like, how can I get this and make this happen? And believe it or not, back in the day, there was a custom rod shop, CMS. And I remember walking in there, I thought, like, a custom fishing rod, this is like the coolest thing ever. Like, I like nice things, you know what I mean? So I was like, here we go. Like, this is me in a nutshell, you know? Went in there, just was astonished and blown away by this whole idea of you can customize a fishing rod, you know? And I'd go in there, buy components and figure out on YouTube, like my favorite thing is I went to YouTube University for this stuff, you know? And just kept going at it, you know? But the main stem of that was just to get on the water with nicer gear that wasn't a Walmart special type of thing, you know, and just progress my skill, you know, and go out there with different guys and further offshore and just needed better gear and didn't have the budget for it. So like everybody figured out what I could do to make it happen. I was making myself, you know. It was pretty funny. I actually started building lures too back in the day because I wanted the nice lures and only had like $40 in my name. That's not even a plug nowadays, you know. But
yeah, you could get the back hook.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but that's kind of the stem of why I got into building fishing rods, the sheer passion and just trying to make two things work together, you know?
I love it. So this is now in your younger days now, and you're kind of figuring out that you got the passion for fishing on lockdown, but now you're figuring out this kind of like auxiliary passion for kind of this DIY space, right? Of doing it up. Because some people wouldn't want that. Some people would say, yeah, I'd rather just buy it fresh out the box and spend every second. But clearly there was something that drew you to the details and the process. Do you find yourself to be a process oriented person?
For sure. You know, and I definitely like things my way, you know? So it's just like, I'm a very anal person when it comes to, if this is not like perfect, this is not 100% right. Like I can't use it or look at it because it will just make me nuts all day. You know what I mean? Like say something a little off, it's just like, whether it's my truck or anything else in life, you know, if it's not right and I gotta look at that all day, like even if it's just sheerly aesthetics or something of low value, like it would drive me nuts until it's perfect, you know? If I know it's there.
Definitely the personality traits you want out of someone building your gear too. You wouldn't buy your beautiful rod fresh out of a box and you're looking, the guides are all cockeyed.
Definitely.
All right. So let's continue down the journey here. So you've found this kind of auxiliary passion here and tied it to your love for fishing, but you're still a younger kid at this time. There's a lot that goes on between finding out that you got a little bit of a hobby and now running a business, and the business is sustainable. How many years have you been in business now?
So established the company formally back in like 2017, I want to say,
awesome.
But was well doing it beforehand, you know? So
so somewhere around seven, 8 years in business.
Yeah. Absolutely.
7 years.
Yep. Awesome. Yep. Absolutely. So yeah, no, it was pretty cool. Did it. I was, like I said, when I was 11, 12 years old, I started building my first couple rods. And then, all throughout middle school and high school, I was still doing it, you know? Mm-hmm. And during those earlier days, like it was like fishing was kind of like not frowned upon, but definitely got made fun of it for.
It wasn't cool. Let's be honest.
It wasn't cool. It wasn't football. It wasn't basketball. So you're just like, what are you doing fishing? Like it was weird. You know?
So living in Florida now, it's like I see the younger kids, you can see them online on social media. There's like 16, 17 year old kids are still in high school and like fishing is their like the thing, right? It's so like, you're not cool. They're like a, you know, they're a star basketball player, football player, but also they got to show that they can still catch a big snook off the pier. I have a shirt that you'd love that was made by a company in California. It says, make fishing lame again. And people always see it and they're really confused. But like, I was bullied when I was in high school. I remember being at a party and they're like, all he does is stand on the side of a pond and catch bass. He's a loser. And nowadays, like fishing's, I mean, we got the short straw, dude. We missed it by like 5-10 years.
Yep. No, absolutely. It was the same idea. You know, I would get the nickname fish boy, this and that, yada, yada, yada. But I kept like what I did like every day after school, like just kind of on the down low, which was building rods. Like I'd get home, I'd bang on my homework in like 30 minutes. And then I was just sitting there wrapping rods like all day. Like my parents would come home, the house would smell like epoxy. You know what I mean? It's just like, I was like in my mom's office, like the basement was too cold in the winter. So I was up in our dining room doing it. Like there's so many pictures and videos of me just in like my pajamas, just 8 a.m. on like a Saturday morning. I was, what's Zach doing? Just on the kitchen table, just going at it, you know, for fishing rods. So it was pretty cool. You know, it was pretty cool. And thanks to my parents for dealing with that, you know. So
I love it. So now you're taking this, and there's still so many steps, obviously, that go between there and business now, right? So I know, at least from your story, you go off to school, but school had a pretty big impact on how this became a tangible reality.
Yep. So during high school, things started picking up a little bit, you know, and I was working three jobs at once. I was working at two Italian restaurants, bussing tables, food running, this and that, and then another chain restaurant do the same thing. And that was kind of like how I like saved up a little bit of money to go and buy like whether it's new blanks inventory or like a rod wrapper. Like I remember getting a power wrapper was like the biggest thing ever, you know, like instead of hand wrapping it, you know, on stands with rollerblade wheels, you know. I thought it was the coolest thing. I was like, yep, here we go, we're in, you know. So that was that. That was around high school I got that. But then when I went to college, I went to Bryant University. It was first semester, freshman year, of course, and my roommate, his parents, like I did one of the blind like roommate pairings, and I told him like, I built fishing rods and that's super cool. Like, I'm trying to start my little company. And like, he came in moving day with his parents. He's like, oh, he already has his own company. Like, it was like cool. You know what I mean? The business side of it, you know, like I was just like, wow, like, okay, some people think it's pretty neat, you know? I was like, okay, so I'm going to run with this a little bit. So becoming more vocalized about it and being more public about it, you know? And then I remember I was just, that was like the last little thing that was hanging me up. You know, I was afraid to always be active on social media, afraid to like, hey, say like, tell your friends this and that. Well, that was the one thing that I was like very reserved about, you know, and that's just part of growing and maturing. But that was that. And then just, I remember just going like full bore, like the shell had broken. And I remember just like, I found this company online, this and that for new blanks. And I'd sent over, I wanted to buy one of everything. And I remember sitting in my dorm room. I had sent him money on PayPal and it was like $2,800. It was every penny I had to my name. And I was like, well,
as a college kid, that's basically like $10 million.
Absolutely. Dude. I was like, everything I'd saved for the summer, all my jobs, you know what I mean? Everything. And I was just like, well, like I'm in this now. Like I have to, like, I have to get my money back at us. But two, it's just like, I just remember feeling that. It's just like, yep, this is what I'm doing. Like that I'm in this, you know? And then once that hit, it's just one thing after another, after another. I started taking wholesale work. Like I'd go to trade shows and these bigger companies would be like, oh, you build rods. Like, we'd love to have you build some rods for us, like under our name, like white labeling, you know? I had no idea that it existed. You know what I mean? I was just like, whoa, like I can build a rod for someone, but it's their name. Like I can get paid for it. That's so cool. You know, like thought that was the coolest thing ever. And that was like my first like stab at going for some volume. I remember like there was a shop Plymouth and he's just like, I have 50 rods for you to make. And I was just like, 50, oh my god, like I'm like, we go, you know. It was like, yeah, the craziest thing ever, you know. But it was really cool to see the progressional stages of just like making a couple rods for like my mom and my dad and a friend or two, to like being thought of as like a cool thing to do, but mixing my early stage of business in with all of this. And it was just like it was just everything I love, like business, making money, and fishing all at once. And it was just like the cool, that's who I am, you know.
I got a couple of responses to that, so I want to tangent to the right one first. But like the fact that you hit on, and I have personal experience with this as well, and so I want to lean into it. But like you talked about, you kind of got away from where you were growing up, got off to school, mm-hmm. and you kind of get, that's a lot of things that are good and aren't good about college, a lot of things highly debated about, you know, that experience. 100%. But I would say going off and the ability to like dive into who you are, like, okay, I'm going to take a deep breath. It's a reset button. You get like a clean whiteboard. That's how I felt about college, is like, yeah, these are the things I think I like. These are the things I think I don't. And with, you know, I'm here now, you're away from your parents, mm-hmm. the sole responsibility is on yourself. Whether it comes to, like you said, you bought all those blanks, whatever it was, a couple hundred, and pretty simple. You got to make them into something or you just gave away your money, right?
Yeah, like absolutely, there's no more
like, you know, mom and dad can just help with this or with that. Like it's on you now.
It was done.
It's a really good learning experience, but also like the ability to, when you accept who you are and what you believe in and what you want to fight for or what you want to do with your life, man, the best possible route to like making the most out of that is you got to dive in. You wouldn't be where you are today if you decided, absolutely, like, I'm going to make one a week as a hobby. Mm-hmm. You're a hobbyist. So,
yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
Kudos to that. Hopefully, if we've got any young, I know we actually do have some younger listeners. We've been at different events and had like high school and college kids come up and they're like, I listen to every episode. So, if you're listening now and you see your path, you don't have to build rods. You don't have to be a guide. You don't have to, you know, whatever you like I said, building lures, or maybe it's something very tangential to fishing. Yeah. Want to own a restaurant, you want to own a hotel, like whatever
anything, chopping firewood, you know what I mean? Yep. You know, so
if you're gonna chop it, chop as much as you can, right? Like do. So I love that great ethos and a great kind of takeaway from there. But so at this point you're starting to realize, I mean, you've invested in raw product and you're starting to pick up orders and demands. Now it's like, before it's been, you've been selling stuff, but now you got like a business. Now
it was rolling.
This is a thing. At this point, I'm sure you have like a couple of years in this series here where it's like exponential, right? To get from where you are there, a small order now to, I guess, to jump forward for a second, how many rods did you do in 2024? Do you have
thousands?
Thousands, right?
Yeah, so all over the world.
And 50 used to be the scariest number to you, right?
That was, like an order. I thought I was the coolest thing since sliced bread. I was just like, we are in this, man. Like,
and now you're in a meeting where they're like, I want to do 50 units. And you're like, don't you effing waste my time again, yeah, right? So that's awesome. So you've got some still a lot of growth. And that's what's cool about this story is like you've lived this exponential experience where it's like, each year you've had to level up in a way that to match the demand of the growth. So the business continues to level up. Do you have any points in here where you have a major setback, a major challenge? At what point did you like have to maybe step back and be like, oh shit, this is a business now? Like,
no, definitely. So I was still in my house, obviously, in college. And the way I was structuring my college classes was I was done by my very last class of the week on Friday at noon or 1 o'clock. And that was the latest I was on campus. From then, I'd instantly go home and start building rods. And I spent 2 weekends my entire 4 years at college living the college experience. Like the first weekend and then like the second to last weekend ever, you know. Every weekend, I was in my house by say call even 2 or 3, just fulfilling orders and trying to take the next step, you know? But that was kind of the scheduling of how to successfully capture my 2 degrees at college, do well at that. And then do this on the side was tough. Like, I mean, there was a stage where I was like, I had 2 buddies, like we were getting ready to put like pop up folding tables in our dorm rooms and rod wrappers because we were going to do it. You know what I mean? Like I was going to slip them some cash and whatever, like do that, you know? But I'd say the scheduling was like the first like major setback. And that was like a hard thing early on because it'd be like, oh, you're very new, but why is it going to take 2 or 3 weeks for me to get this rod? You know, you say you can do it in an hour or 2 hours to do this and this and this. And it's just like, well, I'm a full-time college student, you know? So that was one major setback. But then the other thing too was right around the second semester of freshman year was I needed a bigger facility and I had absolutely no money. And what I did was my university had these kind of competitions for small businesses or startup businesses for students on campus. And I remember sitting there writing my whole entire kind of like about me, what I'd use the money for. I had everything broken down to the penny. It was like a $5,000 award. And I was like, if I can get this, like, this is it. You know what I mean?
I'm rich. So, 5K, baby.
Exactly. Yep. So, and they'd manage the spending, this and that, you know, but long story short, I came in, I smoked everybody. Everybody had this, either this 3/4 of the kids had this new app they wanted to do, or half of them wanted to do a website or drop. I'm just like, and then there's this kid over here, like fishing rods, like explain this a little bit more about this to us, you know? And I just get up there and just the sheer passion they heard in my voice and how like I was like, I'll take a $250 gift card to Home Depot so I can go buy 8 10x4s or whatever for my workbench, you know? And I found and sourced these used like drying motors from California. The guy would give me a good deal, you know what I mean? So I explained what was going on here. And then the other half of the money went for rent for 1 year for a rundown trailer behind a bait shop in Westport, you know? Like literally just like penny pinching and having every single cent figured out to that will go there, that will go there, and that will go there because I can then do X, Y, and Z, you know? But that was like the huge, that was like my investment into the company from like a,
yeah, yeah, your Shark Tank moment.
That was literally it, you know? Like I've had no other parents or investors or anything else. So it's just like, that was like a huge, huge, huge help, you know? But like that was like having that step back of like, need a bigger space. Need to figure out how to drive more than one rod at once, you know what I mean, to accommodate for these orders in a tough time frame, but also getting 2 degrees and trying to do a startup at the same time is like a little bit of everything. I was like, oh, organization here, you know, so.
Yeah, and what I'm sure of the many different things that were positive about the presentation and about the opportunity was, like you said, you weren't like, you know, hey, I need $5,000 and that'll be the down payment on X. And then I got to figure out all these other things. You said that's like, it. I'm going to make the most out of every penny here. Yeah, and I'm sure they saw that hustle and that drive. Because I'm sure some of the other kids were like, it's going to cost $100K to build my app. $5,000 will get the developer's email, you know,
exactly.
Like,
stuff like that, yeah. You know, and I was like, I can get going right now for this. You know what I mean? Like, this will be a level up, you know what I mean? But it was super cool. And then once a semester they ran this award, I think I won it every single time. up until my last year, senior year. They're like, we can't.
It was the Tom Brady of school business challenges.
It was that one award, and it just like every year I just came in and just smoked it, you know. So it was pretty cool. But
that's awesome.
That was huge to help.
So how long do you stay in the trailer behind the bait shop?
Yeah, so the trailer in the bait shop was my entire college career, right? So a little bit of freshman year, towards the tail end summer, all sophomore, all a junior, and then end of senior year. Senior year is when COVID started happening. And that was, as terrible as a thing as it was our industry, as you knew, flourished. And that was when we were getting orders from like big time tackle shops that I had no idea they even knew what was going on or didn't even knew that existed, let alone like in New York and down in Jersey. I'm just like, oh my God, this is crazy. You know, got my first couple of employees down in that same time frame. But then once COVID hit, I mean, the trailer had boxes on boxes on boxes, like could not even walk like without dancing around obstacles to one end to the other, you know? So end of senior year was when I found this place that we're in right now. And it was just a not vacant, but it was used as cold storage from a guy that had like a concrete construction type of business, you know? Barn doors are blown out, you know, there's no insulation, no wire, no nothing. So came in, we built it out with my manager and I mapped everything out, and we're like, this is gonna go, this is where that's gonna go. And within 6 months we already outgrew it. So it's the same kind of story right now. We're dancing around each other like like we're all like cuddled like this, you know.
What's cool about this part of the process too, the entrepreneurial process, is like you walked into you know, this new location, and 10 years from now you look back and you'd be like, what a piece of shit. Like, I can't believe that we even thought, but you probably walked in and you're like, it's perfect. You know, it's like when you get your first car and you're like, it's everything I ever want. Like a wheel's falling off. There's a rat in the tailpipe. Right? But it's like right for that moment, it's exactly because you're comparing it to where you're coming from, to where you're going. So absolutely. I always appreciate that part of the entrepreneurial spirit. It's like you're way more appreciative because you realize how hard it is to go from one to two to three to four. But then when you look back, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I was at one. I can't believe I was making them in my basement and someone was paying me $100 for a rod. I didn't deserve it. And now you're like, got orders for $1,000 rods, right?
That's it, you know?
Yeah, really, really, I love that level of the process. So you end up in the next location. At this point, are you like, or maybe this has already happened, so if we're out of order here, like at what point are you like, man, I can't do this all by myself. Like, I'm going to clearly need some extra manpower.
Well, that was it. So that first kind of mentality hit when I was freshman summer. So freshman year at Dunwoody College, going summertime, almost going to a junior, that's when I got my first employee, you know? And then it was great during the summer because summertime just absolutely straight out with everything. And then what was really neat about this was in the wintertime, he was in high school, I was in college. So he could go in, I gave him a key to the shop, he could go in while I was at college now for three hours a day, 4 hours a day, and wrap and do some basic stuff while it was Monday through Thursday, you know. And that's when I first was like, I need help, you know. And then that in itself was a whole list of challenges between management and trying to just keep someone busy. And it's just like hourly salaries and this and that. It's so many challenges in itself to figure out, you know, because now it's just like, yeah, you thought you were pulling X, Y, and Z versus net profit for this project. Now it's slash in half or three quarters because you have this. You know, you didn't have to heat the shop Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You know, now you got to heat it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Now you got to do this and do that. It's just like,
just buy him a sweatshirt. It'll be good.
Right. But no, so that was a whole list of challenges too, you know? But that was when I first was like, I need help, you know? And then we find ourselves straight out again. Like, he's 40 hours a week, I'm 40 hours plus 1,000 a week, you know? Then it's okay, what about a second one? Figure out a second one, put a new bench up, this and that. Now it's okay, a whole nother set of challenges. Now I have two of the same issues, but like different in the same time. It's like, he'll do that one. Now what's he going to do? It's like, oh, do we have work now for this? Sometimes the orders will come in, and now it's like we're sitting there both looking at each other like, what do we do right now, you know? And just figuring out the growing pains of between management, workflow, cash flow, overhead, indirect. It's just so many things to figure out that, quite frankly, my university was not educating me on, you know? So
yeah,
it was a whole nother side conversation, but it was just like things of just getting down and dirty, figuring it out, like, and just rolling with it, you know?
Well, there's no perfect zone, right? Well, there is, but you'll never remain in it, because you're either going to be understaffed because you got so many orders coming in, which is a good, bad problem, or you build out your employee and then orders start coming back. So it's like you're constantly playing that balance. And it's interesting because now your priorities have to shift too, right? It's not like you're not just a kid who loves building rods and you want to, you know, I want to use this color thread this time to make it look this way. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, I have responsibilities. Now, when you're in college, if you decide you don't want to do an order for 2 months because you're going to go travel around Europe, everything just pauses, right? Like, and then restarts when you come back in. Now you decide you're not going to do 2 months of orders and you got people's livelihoods, right? So I'm sure that was a very unique experience to shift from, and probably a little bit of a heavy responsibility early, though. And I'm sure it still is to this day, but probably something early on is like, man, this is a very different pressure than building a couple rods.
So much pressure. And that's when it went from like starting to burn a little bit of the hobby side of it, and then, or definitely burn the hobby side of it, to now it's just like, this is a business. Like, you have, like, at the end of the day, and I need a paycheck too. How am I going to go do all the stuff I need to do, you know, let alone progress and grow this company. So I was forced to mature heavily in that sense, you know, and just figure it out. It fell on my face 5,000 times, like whether it was just lost wages for 2 or 3 weeks straight, and there goes all the money I had made through the summer, and then it's just like, we'll build it back up next year, figure out, learn how to do it, you know. But that was the hardest.
Yeah, you talked about falling on your face, and I know I've got a very, you know, interesting path that my career has gone that I couldn't predict it either. That's very much entrepreneurial as well, very DIY. You know, I'm gonna make my own lane that kind of is like a combination of a handful of lanes that people more traditionally take. But definitely falling on my face a bunch. And what's funny is you kind of build up this resiliency of like, the first time you fall on your face, you're like, oh shit, like, how am I going to fix this? How am I going to get out of this? You fall enough times that like, when you start falling, you just kind of you're like, man, this is the next one I'm going to figure. Like, our drying racks just exploded. We just lost, you know, 100 rods out of a 1,000 rod order. Like, and yet at this point you're like, shit, all right, well, how do we solve it? Right. Versus like, I'm sure the first, you know, you're a business, and sure, at some point you've had one customer be like, hey, I don't like, you know, this, I want this fixed or whatever. And that you, that's the first time you heard that, you're probably like, oh my God, I made a single mistake. Yeah, and now you're just like, that resiliency grows, I'm sure.
That's it. You know, and what got me through a lot of this was at a certain point, like you had touched on, it was just back to back to back at points, it felt like. And there's always going to be issues. And the sooner that I learned that this is not always going to be a thing, but there's always going to be hurdles to overcome, like that there are never be always going to be hurdles, like that right there, just adjusting my mindset to being like, okay, like there's always going to be issues. It's absolutely inevitable, whether you are Fortune 500 or whether you're in a trailer, there's always going to be issues, different scales and different calibers, but there's always going to be issues. And that's putting myself in that mentality and just going to figure out my problem solving skills is what allowed me to just be like, okay, like that's I'll get hit in the face and I'll get knocked down. Up we go, always having ups and downs, you know? So that was a huge element that I learned.
So let's dive into the one thing I'm sure every person who sells a product hates, or some love, but eventually is probably one of the more difficult things to deal with: customer service, right?
Yes.
I'm sure you've gotten an email. You can do everything right in this world, and there's always a grumpy person somewhere. So like, what's the, give people a little bit of transparency, look into the background, like, what's customer service like for the company? How do you handle things? Any learning experiences?
Yeah, so we definitely pride ourselves of having some of the best professionalism and customer service in the industry. You know, one of my favorite sayings is, you find fishermen that fall into businessmen's shoes. Well, I tend to be a little bit of the different opposite way, businessman that loves fishing, you know? We always are here with our clients, emails, my phone is 24/7. Like, even last night, it was like 11:45 and I'm chatting with a guy about brown shark fishing rods, you know, and he was, you know, but just always being there for them, whether there's an issue or whether they're just excited, you know, because I remember ordering my first customer rod. The sheer excitement's weird, you know what I mean? Like, it's the feeling of getting a new fishing rod. It's just like, and they, it might be 11, 12 o'clock at night or 4 in the morning when they're up fishing. Like, it's just being there at whenever I can is a huge thing that I see lacks tremendously in this industry, you know? So that is that. And then we have clients that are extreme business owners where they have like 30, you have 30 seconds of their time. You cannot waste a single bit of it. And it has to be done on time, done exactly as you say, with absolutely zero errors, you know? And if something happens, then boom, they're on to the next. And it's a phenomenal customer that gives us tons of orders every year, you know? There's lots of nonchalance in the sense of like, oh, well, we were only 5 days shorter. Oh, don't worry about the glue line. We were rushing for you, so we could even get like we don't roll like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So, right, like it's not coming out the door, you know. So, from the customer service side, like that is like huge, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's I'd rather fall short on a quote time than give you something that either we're not happy with or you're not happy with, because that rod's gonna last you a lifetime. The idea of falling a couple of days or a couple of weeks short of a quote time is they'll get over it, you know. Product will, when they're sitting there holding it on year five and there's nothing wrong, like it's okay, he was 2 weeks behind, you know. That's how also or want to think.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, again, me and you are both under 30, right? So we're younger faces in this industry, but from what I've seen in recent years, it feels like the growth of businesses and brands and fishing is almost cyclical, and being smaller in our sense is a little bit like you can be small and mighty because you have the flexibility and are not as constrained by the system that you've developed. Now, hopefully 20 years from now, you are cranking, you know, it's the biggest rod brand in the world and you have these issues, right? But I'm sure you won't, you know, look back and regret on getting to that point. But like being small and mighty is like, I'm sure one of it, like you said, when COVID all of a sudden, like our industry boomed, but on top of that, you know, they're reaching out to, I won't even say like competitor X, right? That they normally do, you know, 1,000 rods a year with, but that competitor's like, sorry, I can't get you your rods for 18 months when there was shortages and stuff. And you're like, I could probably build you 12 by tomorrow. You know, that flexibility and being able to be scrappy, you'll be rewarded in the industry. And I also think you can push smaller businesses that have those tangible skills and also a good product. That's like, if your rods sucked, none of this would be possible, right? They broke along the way. They weren't nice. Like, So you have a good product and you have that spirit and that flexibility. You can really like shake up the industry because you challenge those bigger brands to like, shit, this guy's crushing me. He's making premium rod. He's matching our quality. Your pricing is the same or whatever. And outside of that, he's crushing our timelines. Like that's how suddenly, say there's a rod rack of 100 rods at a shop, you might be 10 and 3 years later, you're 50 of them. And it's just because when they have slots, you can gobble them up, right?
That was exactly it, you know. And I one thing that I was a broken record about was I thought as COVID as the largest opportunity for me possible, because like you had touched upon, we were getting phone calls from guys that had long-standing relationships with other rod builders that were very much so better than us, you know what I mean? And I was just like, if I can go in there and provide a professional service and just give them everything, just knock quality out of the park. Pricing I wasn't concerned about, because at the end of the day, it is what it is. But just I took it as an opportunity where if I can treat them right when things go down or things settle down, like why would they want to go back? Or if things are going so well, why would they shift it? You know what I mean? Like that was like my biggest thing. You know, I'm very big on when times are good, keep them good and keep treating people with absolutely just sheer respect and passion, because when times are not good, that's what they're going to remember of. Like, you know what I mean? And I feel like a lot of people will just sit back and relax and wait for the phone to ring when times are good. You know what I mean? Or wait for the phone to ring times are good. Like, oh yeah, I'm 5 weeks out. I should have called in April. Like almost like it's your fault, you know, versus like, we'd love to do it. Like we're very busy right now, but please, like this is what's going on. Like here's an honest quote time. Like we're going to do X, Y, and Z for you. And then then here we are, like in a down year. This industry was a down year and we had the best year ever.
That's awesome.
So it's just awesome. It's just like people remember how you take care of them, you know?
And you know, takeaway for any younger listeners, number two or three at this point, probably even way more, but the relationships are everything, especially in our industry. I think I may have told this on an episode years and years and years ago, but I went to the University of Maine. I got a job right out of school. Didn't really work out well. I went through a lot of like the really cliche, like fresh out of school stuff, the girlfriend, long-term girlfriend breakup, you know, like all like life things, going from big fish in a small pond to like figuring out the world. And I went back to homecoming and talked to one of my fraternity brothers who's wildly successful. And actually the company's called MedRhythms. And they, what they do is it's neurologic music therapy. So it's totally crazy. They help people like after a stroke, they can't like walk or speak, and they can use rhythm and music to reprogram the brain's pathways to getting from like being able to talk. So like that was damaged during. So like literally like God's work. Right. And then I'm over here like, I want to find a fishing job. This sucks. Right. So shout out to Brian and Owen. But I remember talking to Brian, and he gave me advice that to this day has been a huge part of my life. And she's like, to be the expert in everything fishing. And this is not diminishing anyone who's built a lifetime in the fishing industry. The path to being number one fisherman, number one rod builder, number one whatever, is a much shorter path in the grand scheme of if you look at other professions, right? So when we have such a small industry, if you want to be the number one brain surgeon in the world, you have about like 80 years and like, you know, all this research in the world and all these incredible, like to make it up the ladder of such a small industry, like for the recreational fishing industry, it's a much shorter path. And so for anyone listening, like one relentless, like beating on the drum, you'll realize you, if you do it for a couple of years and you look back, you realize you're much, you know, you've made so many inroads and made so many opportunities you might not expect early on, which you're a great example of. All right. And then the second part of that, which is the most important, is relationships are everything because this industry is so small. That's so I'm sure like if you decide to sell your business tomorrow and move on to net building or what, you know, whatever you're going to do, you move on to something else or the business, like those, the buyers that you've met, the major retailers that you met, the major guides who use your product.
Yep.
Those aren't going to like, it's such a small community that those relationships, you got to treat them right now because you're going to see these same people 5, 10, 15 years from now.
100%, you know, and it's just like, we do like, even on that, on the topic of relationships, like I have clients that work for like either some people in the Navy sector, some people in the medical sector, you know what I mean? And I got, like, I had a client that's just like, oh, let's use this rod builder as part of our project. Next thing you know, we have a consulting deal for Triton to help design particles for, parcels for, the United States government, you know, it's just like, and it, we
crazy. Go,
so, because of the composite engineering and this and that, you know, so it's pretty crazy, you know, to see how the relationships will go and branch off, you know.
Yep.
So
yep. Crazy, but I love it. So I guess and we'll start to put a bow on this here. And how fitting to say, because you have a meeting with, I don't know if you want to say the company, but a massive company, right? On an order.
Yeah,
I don't know.
So we'll, it'll be coming out shortly, but yeah.
That's so today's awesome. Today's a huge. There's no more fitting way to kind of have to put on a bow on something there, because I'm really intrigued by it. And I want to say like, congratulations on all the success. This is awesome. And I think kind of ironic from someone, you know, two younger guys from one to another, but what you're doing, it can be a role model for so many people that see their path. And that doesn't mean just manufacturing in the fishing industry, right? Like, hearing this story could be the reason someone says like, man, I'm going to make the leap of faith. I could see myself being a guide. And they take the same gritty attitude that you did. That's my $1,000 boat. I'm going to build it up or whatever that path might be. So kudos for that. And kudos for sharing. I guess, why don't we put a little bit of a bow on it by telling people, all right, where are you at right now? So now you're at a new you're at your newest location, right?
Yeah.
And you have how many employees right now?
Nine
total. Eight, that's awesome. That's awesome. So if anyone find Zach on LinkedIn, if you're looking for work, but like, why don't you tell people maybe a 2-minute little recap of like what you're looking forward to, what maybe 2025 goals are, and then we'll close it out with how people can find you and learn a little bit more if they enjoyed listening.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely moving forward. I'm going to try to double the company in the next year or two, you know, and to take these steps, we're playing with some big volume and some big numbers, you know, but we are taking a step. One of the meetings today is a huge leap that could expedite that, but I'm looking to grow, but always remain constant on the quality. With whatever we do, we will be the best in terms of quality and craftsmanship and care, you know? So that is definitely the model going into the years to come, you know? Eventually, one day, we might have a full-service tackle shop, but as of right now, we don't we have tunnel vision on simply building rods because that's where we want to keep our focus, you know. But maybe one day we have a tackle shop. We maybe have a secondary location down in New York, New Jersey, maybe even Florida in your backyard. Those have also been thoughts, you know. But branching out, going more internationally, going more nationwide, is where we're going right now, you know. And we're not stopping for absolutely anything or anyone, you know. We're just going full throttle.
I love it, dude. So someone listening right now, they're like, man, I got to get one of those rods. I got to learn more about this kid, or I got a business idea. You never know who's listening. I want to invest. I got a proposal. I got an idea for how can people reach you? How can people find you?
Absolutely. So we're very active on social media, Instagram and Facebook. Just search Zach's Custom Rods, ZCR is the logo. Right here, it'll pop up. You can go on our website. We have the world's first 3D modeling software for building and designing rods. So if you want to go play around with some rods, you can jump on, mix and match some colors, have some fun with it, see what like a custom rod is almost about. And then you can always fill out form submissions there. And it's linked right to my phone, right to my email. And that's another great way to get a hold of me, you know?
I love it, dude. Well, I had a bunch more questions about, you know, what makes a premium rod. And we'll just have to have you back on at some point soon. But
we'd love to come back. I got plenty more to talk about. So
I love it, dude. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. I'm not sure which order these are all going to come out on. We got a couple in the hopper. We got a really cool one about Jax. We just recorded one with Daniel from Captains for Clean Water about what's going on in Florida and advocacy. And then Zach kicked off, you know, our big three to start off 2025. So these will be coming out in the next couple of weeks. But if you're listening now, keep an eye out for, we're going to have some more coming out about our Jack project and this massive research, education, and advocacy model that's going to take place from South Carolina all the way down to Florida and then even all the way out west to Texas. So we might need Zach to build some rods because Jack's will beat the brakes off about any junk rod you got. So thank you all for listening, and we look forward to, we'll catch you on the next guidepost.
Thank you.